We're back with another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. As always, you can email the show at radio@thefederalist.com. Follow us on Twitter at FDRLST. Make sure to subscribe wherever you download your podcasts as well. Today, I'm joined by my colleague, Christopher Bedford, senior editor at the Federalist, co-founder at RightForge. Chris, thanks for stopping by.
Great to be here.
Well, we're doing a quick podcast today, kind of to debrief on something that made a lot of waves on Capitol Hill this week. Chris is a good long-time journalist covering Capitol Hill. You've been around the block a few times.
You're calling me old?
Yes, and you know that that's what I'm getting at here. And in fact, you're old enough to remember when the question of marriage was not a settled debate. And this is what we kind of decided to talk about here, was basically to debrief what happened on Capitol Hill this week, where Republicans voted on a bill that Democrats presented as a codification of Obergefell. They are citing the Clarence Thomas concurring opinion in the Dobbs case that said rooting some of these cases in the right to privacy basically might not have been the most wise of decisions. It might not have been the most constitutional of decisions. So Democrats brought forward this codification of Obergefell that would, I believe, have overturned DOMA, which, Chris, again, you were so old that you actually remember when DOMA was a thing.
You know, most of our listeners probably remember when DOMA was a thing.
Probably. But, I'm not that young. I, too, remember when DOMA was a thing. But when, I mean, truly, the idea of whether marriage is a settled debate or not, that happened very fast.
It did happen very fast. Donald Trump was the first president to run, saying that he would run for office and win, saying that he didn't care about gay marriage in 2016, because Barack Obama had said marriage is between a man and a woman. It was considered settled. And they've done this whole thing, the left has, especially the gay left, about what love, is love, and kind of this, like, that's all that really matters. And people accused that of being a slippery slope and were shut down and said, oh, no. You had the Andrew Sullivans of the world coming out and saying, if you just legalize gay marriage, then you'll normalize homosexual relationships, because now there's a pretty small percentage of them that are monogamous. And but that will change if you introduce marriage into the equation. Well, that hasn't really happened. Mm. And now we're at a level where I think it's 20% of Democrats are okay with polygamous relationships. And the number is like 40% or 30 or 40% amongst young Democrats, because it's just, what's it my business? Love is love. Mm-hmm. And at the same time that they've become more radical, and we've started to see the fruits of Obergefell in our streets, in these parades, in the pushes for polygamy and other forms of marriage. At the same time, Republicans have completely forgotten how to talk about it. Like, this is one of those difficult issues that have real humans that are impacted by it. People who everyone knows, people, maybe loved ones who are involved in these kind of relationships. So it's much more difficult to talk about than simple taxes and things that they're very good at. But if you look at this vote, at the Republican vote right now, dozens in the House went over and voted yes. The Freedom Caucus, the head of the Freedom Caucus, voted yes.
47 House Republican votes.
And was surprised when a lot of his colleagues said no. And you had a couple of congressmen, Jim Jordan and others, who did go down there and they argued against it. But their arguments were largely about process. Their arguments weren't about marriage. So, I mean, right now it's so confusing for the Republican Party. No one's even coming out in there saying, well, I voted yes because I'm pro-gay marriage, or I voted no because I'm anti-gay marriage.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, they're just talking about process. They're so uncomfortable. And it's like, all right, just be open. Say what you mean. And this was the first, this was like Bull Run, where it's everyone walks in there and they're all ready. It's the first battle and it's a total disaster. No one's actually prepared for actual talking about this anymore. Like, no one.
Yeah.
And everyone just, all the Republicans just fled the field. I mean, you've got conservative groups in the House of Representatives sending letters out calling for their Senate colleagues to be courageous in defense of marriage when their own ranks like shattered and split and fled the field.
47.
It's wild. And, you know, there are pro-gay marriage Republicans, certainly, but they should say it and not just come out in process, because this bill is a fairly radical bill. Not only would it codify Obergefell, but if Obergefell were ever struck down, then that would send marriage back essentially to the states. That would allow the states basically say that if Massachusetts or Utah passes polygamy or some other thing, that it has to be recognized by South Carolina or Alabama or California, back and forth. It would bring marriage in America down to the lowest common denominator in a way that's extremely destructive. And our Republican representatives and congressmen and senators, they have to make a decision. Okay, I know people who live gay lifestyles. I love people who have gay lifestyles. But is this the culture that I want to promote as good? Is this the culture that I want? That kind of like trope that politics is downstream of culture, well, it's not always true. What's legalized and what's made illegal by our political equation has a huge impact on what is broadly accepted, whether it's drug use or sex or marriage or abortion. Those things trickle down into the culture. It's the way you codify your morality. And right now, Republicans are doing a bad job of it. And there's no one out there. There's no one who's like the guy who fights on this or the woman who fights on this. There are some people who are strong, but it's not like with abortion or with immigration. And, you know, I've gone on a long rant here, and I'm talking a lot about just conversations I've been having with friends today about this, the disappointment. For years and years and years, there were just a couple of congressmen who would go out there all the time and fight about immigration. Steve King and there was another guy, and they were always out there, and sometimes they said the wrong thing, and they would get in trouble, and their colleagues would condemn them. And then Sessions joined in, and he started talking about immigration. The base was there the entire time, but no one was talking about it in a really cogent way until Donald Trump started talking about it, and then Tucker Carlson started talking about it, and then people got it. Like, holy smokes, this is something that's actually having a serious impact in our country. And right now, the polls are pretty bad for gay marriage. But if we actually do believe this is important to our culture and important to our society that men and women, mothers and fathers, are not interchangeable in a child's life and a relationship, then we need to get better at talking about it now. And once you have those champions out there speaking about it and people, the Catholic pulpits ready to talk about it again, then I think you'll see a shift. It's just we have to get ready fast.
Well, and the argument has been made, I think, poorly on the right for years. And that's part of the reason it went in the wrong direction in the first place. And there's been really no reckoning over it. Here's how Reuters describes the bill. They have said, where'd it go? Sorry, I just had it. Under the House bill, states could still restrict gay marriage if the Supreme Court overturns its prior ruling. But such states would be required to recognize marriages that occurred in states where they remain legal. So basically, you might be not legally married in the state you live, let's say Tennessee, but you can just go get married in New York. And then you will be legally married in Tennessee. You just wouldn't have been married by the state
benefits,
of Tennessee.
The legal protections, those things that the Defense of Marriage Act blocked.
Right. And so I've seen like Kat McCamick, a Republican, for instance, saying she supported the bill because there's federal consistency. You have to have consistency from state to state. And that's an important thing.
That's a process argument.
Right.
Because she's incapable of just say it. I support gay marriage.
Coward. This is where I think there's such an interesting dynamic, and we've talked about this on the podcast a couple of times over the course of the last year. When this meme went around, this was during the DeSantis kerfuffle over Disney, that had pictures of kisses from Disney movies in the past and said, yeah, Disney, including a same-sex marriage kiss, is, quote, sexualizing children. And yet here they have all of these straight kisses from their movies in the past. Well, people need to understand why they're making that argument. What is the difference between a chaste same-sex kiss on camera and a heterosexual one? What's the difference? Well, the difference is important. And if you believe in traditional marriage, that's what's really happening when you're saying that you don't want children to be sexualized by same-sex kissing, because that you have to then explain the difference. It's outside of the norm. Thus, you then have to explain sexuality to children. And that's what happens when you subvert the norm. And so there's this like natural sense that there's something that sexualizes children about that.
We don't want to talk about the deviant natures of different relationships.
Well, if you push it further. Yeah, exactly. If you push it further, it's like, well, then what is wrong with that? And it seemed to me that there were a lot of centrist conservatives and a lot of people in general that were just unhappy with that same-sex kiss being pushed into the Lightyear movie because they felt it was sexualizing children. Well, if you push that question further, the natural conclusion of it is you're saying something is different than the norm.
Okay. Yes.
So then talk about it like that.
Yeah, I mean, people are, our society has handcuffed itself out of talking about the obvious things and the changes and differences. For example, if I don't know if anyone's been covering monkeypox coverage or reading monkeypox coverage, it's kind of interesting. You read about it in the New York Times or the Washington Post, they'll just refer to, monkeypox started to spread after an event in New York City. Well, what was that event? Was it like a bake sale? Mm-hmm. Was it a concert? No, it was a warehouse sex orgy, a gay warehouse sex orgy. I mean, that's where this is spreading. Now,
he's not exaggerating or making a joke, although he does often do that. That's exactly what's happening.
I mean, this is legit.
And some of it is like...
it happens in all the major cities. There are warehouse districts I've heard across the country from folks where they have these sort of parties, like a discotheque, all-night kind of drug-fueled orgy party with lots of people. Because monkeypox is like actually not super easy to contract. It takes a lot of pretty intimate interaction.
You can stop right there.
Now...
can I just say something, though? The CDC website on monkeypox instructs people to, quote, wash their fetish gear.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's one thing. There have always been seedy sort of underground clubs, and there's always been a subversive sex culture that you can find, underground, wherever it is. But there's a difference between that and it being normalized. And we have normalized these behaviors to the point where there's no stigma. We're trying
to
destroy the stigma of
it.
And there should be a stigma because it's dangerous.
I mean, for this past school year that just ended, children are being kicked out of school for weeks at a time because of COVID and possibility of exposing them. Over the past 2 years in the United States, we've shown no compunction with shutting down churches, shutting down children's schools, canceling Christmas to stop the spread of disease. But no one's going to come out and say, you know what, maybe we shouldn't have sex orgies in warehouses.
Well, there are people...
those are corporate events. So it's not just like random meetups. People make money on that. They're rented out.
Yeah.
There are DJs. This is a business. It's not like people don't like to talk about it because the whole thing about Pride Month is like, hey, it's all just the same. Everyone's normal. It's just love is love. The only thing that can dissuade you from that opinion is actually seeing a Pride parade and being like, that's not what I act like with my husband or wife. But we don't want to talk about why that's spreading in this community, why it's, quote, devastating the gay communities of Manhattan or New York City and other places, because we don't want to talk about what's going on. Our whole society is like that.
That dishonesty is not good for anyone. You're right. It is the whole society, and the dishonesty is not good for anyone because Don McNeil, who had been fired from the New York Times, he was the guy that got fired from the New York Times because he used the N-word in a conversation with a student, in a purely educational conversation. He did not use it as a slur. He just used it on a trip, and years later, he got fired over it. He wrote for Barry Weiss's... he wrote for Barry Weiss's Substack this week that he was saying, you need to cancel and reschedule Pride to September. That he's been saying that because of monkeypox, but he's the only person that I have seen make that argument. And it's not good for people who are hurt by this that we can't talk about these questions honestly. And that example is a really good one. And that's what this dynamic is interesting. That's why this dynamic is interesting to me, because we are now having this reckoning. If you don't think that the Obergefell decision and the pretty rapid mainstreaming of gay marriage is related to what we've seen now with gender fluidity creeping into curriculums younger and younger, I don't know what to tell you. I think even the left would say that Obergefell was a huge step in that direction. They would celebrate it. But I think even if they're conceding that that was an important point along the way, we can look back and say these two things are connected. And Republicans now are being asked to talk about an issue that is really serious and really meaningful. And it's going to be pushed further. They're going to have to answer questions about surrogacy. We had Katie Faust on the podcast this week who talked about how a lot of these new technologies put the parents before the children. And that's a serious thing. And if Republicans can talk about it more like Katie, and if they can, you know, learn to have these conversations to center the perspectives of children who have been, who've been raised by people where they aren't with their biological mothers and fathers, or they're deprived of a biological mother or father, then you can tell these stories more easily and you can talk about these things. But it's such an interesting dynamic that Republicans are suddenly so eager to jump into the culture war and talk about the excesses of trans ideology. But at the heart of that is this idea that men and women are different. And the idea that men and women are different means that we complement each other in the institution of marriage and complement each other for good reasons that benefit children. We know that, and we should talk about it. But now at the same time as they're wading into the culture war on this issue, they're running away from it on the other. All right, so think about this. Many of us spend more time every day in our office chair than we do in our cars or in our beds. And that's why it's so important to invest in the right chair so that you spend those hours with the right level of support and the right level of comfort, and then you get the most productivity out of your day too. X Chair has made my time at my desk not only more productive, but it's honestly one of my favorite places to sit for any reason. In fact, I'm sitting in it right now. Not only does X Chair's patented dynamic variable lumbar, or DVL, offer the ultimate customized support, but my X Chair can even give me a massage, or heat up, or cool down. And now, thanks to X Chair's new FS360 armrests, I can even adjust my armrests to the perfect position. It is truly an incredible chair. All these unique X Chair features help the hours at my desk fly by in complete comfort. That's why I love my X Chair. Again, I'm sitting in it right now. Go to xchairfederalist.com now. That's the letter X, Chair, FederalistCom, or call 1-844-4-X-CHAIR for $100 off your order. X-Chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort, and you can finance your purchase for as little as $30 a month. xchairfederalist.com.
The culture war, the right has experienced a bunch of victories recent last couple of years in the culture war, I think, by changing the way that they talk about things. A combination of morality, but also social sciences to try and push this stuff. If you quote the Bible and you quote Jesus and you quote the Old Testament to people, if they don't believe in it, they don't care about it, or that's not their interpretation, they're just going to shut down. It's very difficult to persuade people using that. It's much like people are persuadable in different aspects, and they've done a great job of doing that. Not God created man and God created woman, but yeah, that's not a woman, that's a man. You know, and here's the impact, and like let's go through it. That's what's really pushing people. Republicans are going to need to just figure it out. I mean, right now, the Democratic base holds them accountable. Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi might not have wanted to hold a vote that said abortion is legal until the last moment, until birth. But they did, because their base basically held a gun to their head and said, this is what you believe. Mm-hmm. You believe it, so you will do it. Republicans can't even get themselves to agree on a 15-week abortion ban. Like, people, they're all over the place.
Yep.
They were colleagues after the gay vote this week. They were just looking at each other like, oh, you're against that? Mm-hmm. And other people say, no, you're for that? Like, there's just no coherence. And I think a lot of that is we need a couple different leaders and politicians that are willing to talk about this, but a lot of it is going to come from the base. And the difficulty we're going to have here is the donor class and the base are once again not aligned in the GOP. We've had this over the years, and it's changed a little bit, where we had a Republican donor class that cared about like three things: free trade, Israel, and low taxes. And that's not really what the base was like. What about immigration? Mm-hmm. What about abortion? Mm-hmm. What about crime? And those, they were just very different from the mega donors. The Democrats have largely been aligned. Well, maybe not. I mean, the Democrats had to shed a lot of their traditional voters, because their donor class and their activist class are against, you know, the labor coalitions, et cetera, and the working class parts of the Democratic Party. So they're experiencing some of this too, but nothing at the level of the GOP. We're going to have to train people to talk like this. I mean, Ryan Anderson and a couple other people were basically the only folks out there who were ever talking about this issue for a couple of years on the right, because it was so devastating. If you declared war, if you said something about gay marriage, then you were going to have a target on your back wherever you went. Mm-hmm. People were going to go after you. I think it's kind of shifted a little bit, where people can speak about it now more easily.
Well, I disagree completely.
Do you?
Because of that. But I mean, the vote is a good counterpoint to your argument. I mean, Republicans don't want to talk about this.
I just don't get the level of hate mail that I would expect. Maybe this podcast will change it.
Well, I think, yeah, probably. But I think it's because I think you don't get that level of hate mail because the left really believes that they have purged the country.
Because of victory?
Right. On the one hand, they want to fundraise off the idea that the specter of, you know, gay hate is always looming. On the other hand, they want to say, like, we have scalped you, and we are holding up the scalps of the people who supported traditional marriage, and you lost. Right?
I was just They've talking about this with years. Some friends today, like the rigmarole that they put Ryan Anderson
Love
through
wins.
when he was trying to argue this, basically one of the sole voices. Like, it was a Piers Morgan appearance he did where they made him sit in the audience.
Yes, yes.
Like, just to demean him, be like, look, there's a bigot in the audience, as mm-hmm. opposed to like, here's a guest who's on to discuss this at an equal level.
But
Yeah, you're right.
Well, here's where I agree with you, though. So Katie Foster, I referenced this earlier. We had her on the podcast this week to talk about how all of these new reproductive technologies and ideologies that have been normalized very quickly put parents before children. And that is the good framework. And this is where I think it is getting easier to talk about. The more you have people like, you know, the celebrity that I love, Andy Cohen, saying that one day his children can defrost their siblings. You know, he had children. He's a gay man. He's unmarried. He had children through surrogacy, and he now has frozen embryos and is saying if his children can't conceive one day, they could, quote, defrost their siblings. We're now seeing, I think, starker and starker consequences of a lot of this thinking. And
the elite left wing class, it's like we want unlimited borders to clean our houses and bear our children for our gay celebrities. Yeah. Like, how twisted is that?
Well, yeah, it's getting.
What's that? Bridesmaid tale? Whatever. Handmaid tale? And that's actually it.
And it's becoming more and more clear that there's something really off. And, you know, there's a way to make this argument and say, listen, we're the frog in the boiling pot, right? And it's I understand completely why people have been receptive to arguments like love is love and love wins, because we've been totally secularized. People aren't reading the Bible. They aren't going to church. They aren't rooted in this deeper, enduring idea. They're rooted in the idea that, like, material pleasure is fulfillment. It is your truth. And so it's hard to blame people for being so easily, you know, swayed by these arguments. At the same time, though, people are also, I think, starting to realize that's making them emptier and emptier. That's why Jordan Peterson's book is this runaway bestseller. And Jordan Peterson, I'm sure, is pro-gay marriage. I mean, I don't know that, actually. I shouldn't say. I would guess he is. But I think as the sort of consequences of, it's not even contemporary leftism. It's just plain postmodernism.
We have to talk about it now because of the trans issue.
Right.
But we weren't allowed
to
talk about the difference between men and women because feminism is said you're not allowed to do that. Okay, now we're at a point where, what's it, the National Women's Museum at the Smithsonian nominated its three women of the year, and all three are men.
Yeah, Caitlyn Jenner won Woman of the Year in 2016,
yeah,
2015.
Yeah, now it's just an erasure. So now, okay, now we can actually out in public have a discussion. Well, what is a woman?
Right.
What is a man? What are the differences that they bring?
And why do they matter?
Right.
No, I agree with that. And so what we know so far from this bill is that there are about, it looks like there's a handful of Senate Republicans who are pretty favorable to it. It looks like Rob Portman's going to be favorable to it. Speaking of the differences between men and women, Chris's girlfriend is walking into the room right now to deliver him a cold beer.
She brought one for you too.
Oh wow, I got one. Oh wow, women are useful.
Are they? There you go.
Thanks. Oh, thank you. So, but anyway, Chris, it actually looks like this is going to pass.
They have it with the GOP Republicans. Just only
they have Portman, Collins.
They have seven or eight.
They have a pretty good chunk. Yeah,
they have a pretty decent chance of getting it passed. But so, unfortunately, for this first round, this first battle, the Civil War kind of thing, they're going to have to probably win this fight on process of hold on a second. This would do this, and they're going to have to talk about the excesses of the bill. They're going to have to talk about polygamy and other things that this bill could usher in the absence of Obergefell if it's struck down with the Supreme Court. And that's the only way they can beat this back and then reconstitute their forces and try to figure out, you know, back on Mount Doom where the Republicans meet to talk about these sort of things, reconstitute and try to figure out, all right, where are we as a caucus? And watch what the base says and watch what the voters say. Mm-hmm. There's way too many congressmen and senators from these states. Like we saw Tuberville.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama come out and say, I don't have a problem with it.
People should be able to do what they want.
I think your constituents probably do.
Yeah,
people should be able to do what they want because they can go up there and they can do the whole tour and their campaign trail, the evangelical circuit, and they can hit all these things, then go up to the pulpit and they can say, I'm going to go there. I'm a Bible-believing Christian and all these sorts of things. But then they come to Washington, D.C., and like they've got a completely different mindset. Tucker did a good segment on this, comparing them to absentee fathers. They've just got a completely different mindset. And what actually matters, what they tell their voters matters, don't actually matter to them. So I'm hopeful that, although it's a long shot, and it could completely pass, that if this bill is stopped on some kind of process thing, just because the Democrats pushed too far, that there might be an opportunity to reconstitute and say, okay, Republican Party, cut the cowardice. Are you for gay marriage or are you not? And stop just hiding behind this or that.
All right, I know I've said this before, but I'll say it again. One of the reasons I'm in journalism is because I'm just relentlessly skeptical of absolutely everything, including those glowing MyPillow ads that we all see so much of. But my own skepticism personally was just gone immediately after trying MyPillow, which I really love. Did you know that MyPillow is also about more than just a fantastic pillow, though? Now MyPillow has given the same attention that they've given to those pillows I love so much to their new MyPillow Percal bed sheets. The sale of the year on those MyPillow Percal bed sheets is going on right now. The regular price for queen size sheets is $89.98, but now that's only $39.98 with your promo code. They're breathable, cool, and crisp. They're durable, built to last, machine washable for easy care, available in a variety of styles, colors, and sizes, and they also have a 60-day money-back guarantee and a one-year limited warranty. So go to MyPillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429 for deep discounts on the MyPillow Percal bed sheets. Queen size regular for the price of $89.98 are now on sale for only $39.98. While there, you can take advantage of the buy one, get one sale on MyPillows, towels, and more. Visit MyPillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429 today for the sale of the year on MyPillow Percal bed sheets. MyPillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429. If that moment comes to pass, if the rubber hits the road, the Republican Party will be for gay marriage. And I really believe that. And I do think it's awkward in this moment when the consequences, when Republicans are trying to stand firm and act like they have solutions to the consequences of the society where we've eroded the importance and the distinctions between men and women, the importance of those distinctions. But I disagree. Like, even in Alabama, I mean, listen, I don't live in Alabama. I live here in Washington, D.C. I'm from Wisconsin. I actually just think all over the country, Republican voters, Democratic voters have been have warmed very much to the idea, at least the libertarian perspective on gay marriage, that like the government shouldn't tell you who you can marry and who you can't marry. And I've always been sort of, I don't believe the government should sanction religious institutions like marriage. And Kristen was probably going to wants to fight me physically for saying that. But
no, because there's a difference between men and women. So there are laws against that.
Well, all I'm saying
is striking you. I mean,
right. So like, but I do think that libertarian argument is powerful, even in the Republican base. I don't think a lot of people care about it. I think the Republican affection for Trump is partially a testament to that. But all that is to say, I don't think Republicans will, if the rubber meets the road, I don't think they'll.
I think that's totally possible. But there was also a time when the Republican Party was completely free trade and for amnesty every 2 years.
But that was, they reacted to the will of the people. And I don't think, conditioned.
I think people largely have been conditioned. It needs some champions.
Yep.
It needs people.
Leadership.
Tucker's starting to talk about it a little bit, but there needs to be some kind of leadership on this. That's the kind of thing that can, I mean, we need to make the actual case, and it can't just be, it used to be like this, and it can't just be, it certainly can't come from a hateful point of view, which is what the left wants to paint it as. It needs to come from a point of view, I think, that puts forward families, children, the foundations of our society, the differences between men and women, the difference, how a mother is not interchangeable with two fathers, and a father is not interchangeable with two mothers.
Yep.
Those are the sorts of things. And it's the good thing is that it contains the elixir of truth to it. Like, mm-hmm. It's not the wrong argument. It's mm-hmm. true, and it's been true for thousands of years. It's just our current society, like a lot of societies that fall into decadence, has forgotten it. So it can be fought, but it will be a tough and unpopular battle for a while. And I guess maybe we will get some hate mail today.
People didn't hate social media, like when Obergefell came out, what was that, 2015? There wasn't this like idea that society was sort of falling in on itself and collapsing. And I do think people sense that now. There's an innate sense that that's something that's happening right now. I think
consequences of left-wing agenda, whether on marriage or now we're experiencing it with the inflation. Oh, the green agenda,
yep.
The global warming agenda, that yep. makes everything more expensive, gas more expensive, and causes inflation. Fool me twice.
I love saying this. If we have any members or Hillstaffers listening, read Katie's book, listen to everything she does, and just, you know, this is not coming, as Chris says, it can't come from a place of hate. It can't be angry and reactionary. It's from a place of love for children. And that's first and foremost. And, you know, families are the building blocks of our society, as Republicans have said for years. And it has to just come from that place. And
That was my favorite Santorum line of the campaign when he was running against Ron Paul, which is interesting. And Ron Paul said, the individual is the building block of society. And Santorum said, no, it's the family.
That's the clarification right there.
It was beautiful. And, you know, I think that both of them had a lot of things to bring to that stage.
Agreed.
But I loved that line.
Abolish the Fed. He was completely right.
You know? Yes.
Abolish the Fed and bring back tradition.
Raise your hand if you knew that the Fed was a private bank. Like, seriously.
We took a hard left.
Okay, I have to go on the radio.
He has to go on the radio. Well, you've been listening to another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist, joined today by my colleague Christopher Bedford, senior editor of the Federalist, co-founder of RightForge. We'll be back soon with more. Until then, be lovers of freedom and anxious for the fray.
Reason, and then it faded away.